gardening on the Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Tier Lawn Country Life. Gardens are our second nature with 15 garden centres nationwide.
Now with me is Dermot Gavin, a Chelsea gold medal winner, garden designer, horticulturalist. Good morning, Dermot.
Morning, Pat.
Now the question I have, why haven't I heard of Humphrey Repton?
No, it's a funny one because we all know the name Capability Brown, and this guy was the next guy to come along, and we should know of him because he left a legacy, not so much, well, very much so in gardens, but also in people's libraries. He was a brilliant communicator, and yet his name doesn't trip off the tongue like Capability Brown.
Now, tell me about his background. He was a man who tried quite a few things.
He came from a kind of wealthy middle-class family. His dad was, in effect, a tax collector. He was sent to a grammar school, so a boarding school, to be educated. He was shipped off to Holland to learn about business. He came back and he tried his hand at being an entrepreneur in business, being a journalist, being an artist, being an actor even. So he had all sorts, but none really worked for him.
Now, he learned Dutch. Was that the language of a lot of commerce at the time?
It would have been. Yeah, it would have been. And I suppose that connection to Holland was much more direct if you were in kind of Suffolk, you know, just across water.
Yeah. So he tried everything and failed at everything fairly successfully.
Fairly successful, got married, had a good few kids, so really had to settle on something, and he saw an opening. So in his mid-30s, Capability Brown had died about 5 years before, and nobody had stepped in with any new idea. There were debates going on about what should garden landscapes. Now, this is for the upper crust.
Remind us of the kind of work that Capability Brown did.
Estates such as Blenheim and Stowe and Chatsworth in Derbyshire, he would have come along, he would have persuaded the nobility there to get rid of all the European formality, to sweep it away, because it cost an awful lot to install, but it also cost an incredible amount to maintain. You'd need an army of gardeners. And Capability Brown said, let's have a much more naturalised style. He reckoned he was perfecting God's work, and he made gardens that appeared as if they were beautiful pastoral landscapes, as if they had always been there. Very expensive.
That was the trick, to make it look like it's always been there.
That's it, yeah.
Now, did Repton follow in those footsteps?
He kind of did, in a way. He recognised a trick that Brown had missed. He recognised that sometimes the house, the big castle, whatever it was, the stately home, was left floundering and just melted into the landscape. So he paid more attention to that. He was also different in that he did style himself a landscape gardener, but he didn't carry out the work, so he sold ideas. And the way he sold ideas was just incredible.
Now, this is where marketing comes in, and he was an early marketeer.
Oh, he was the original influencer, the original ground force or super gardener, and any of these sort of things.
How did he do it?
He would go and understand and really, you know, get to understand the estate, whether it was Rusborough in Ireland, Ensley, any of these places. He would understand the estate, spend weeks at a time walking, understanding, looking at groups of trees. And then he would go back to his studio and he would produce a series of amazing watercolors.
So you mentioned he was a painter.
He was a painter, so he had all of that skill. And also as an actor, he was a great communicator. So he would write these tomes, these volumes, which he bound in Moroccan red leather. And he would go and visit whoever was commissioning him. And these books were amazing because they were before and after. It was like switching on your television.
So he had sketches of paintings of before and after.
So all the paintings would have these tabs or levers or, you know, you could pull out something, and he would show the garden the way it was, and he would show the garden the way it could be. And not only that, in his text, he was very lyrical and very persuasive. So he was able to sell the homeowner on the idea of what a change this would make. And pretty soon when he went off in his carriage, the estate owner wasn't left with drawings that he couldn't read or couldn't understand and would need engineers to explain to him, and he wasn't trusting. He could see it in front of him. So the homeowner would spend hours in front of the fire or by candlelight just looking at it. He'd bring these books out, right along the site to understand, right, Repton wants to make a terrace outside the house here. That makes sense. We've never had or that group of trees over there. If we prune them, look at how he's done this. He's drawn them again and he's taken away the boughs and whatever. And all of a sudden it opens up that great vista.
So he understood that the owners, they didn't want just to walk into the job done. They wanted to be involved in the process.
And understand exactly what they were going to get for their money. And that power of persuasion, so it's where all that knowledge that he acquired in Holland and becoming a businessman and being an entrepreneur, it all came down, came out in these red books.
Now, was he a gardener? I mean, did he actually like plants and gardens or was he a visionary?
He was a visionary. He loved plants and gardens. So when his businesses were failing, he really had to settle on something. And it was combining some of his loves, a great love of nature, a real, true love of nature, and an understanding of how the light changes during the day, how, you know, a sunrise, sunset, but also an understanding of seasons. He loved all of that. And he was able to incorporate all of those. It would be multiple drawings, sometimes at different times of the day, that the landowner really appreciated this.
Now, were these houses being built or were they existing houses that then wanted to put order on the grounds around them? Because you can imagine, if the house is still being built, he'd have to work with the architect of the house.
So a combination of both. There were many heritage, and mainly it would have been heritage. So Rusborough, let's say, in Wicklow would have been heritage. But he also worked with Nash and Sir John Sloan on there. He developed relationships with them very early. And they were doing things like the Brighton Pavilion for the Prince Regent then in Brighton. So he was in there at the earliest times when great, you know, avenues and crescents were being built in Bath. So sometimes he was there at the start. Sometimes he was reassessing and adjusting the work of those who had come before him, like Kent.
Now, you sent me a few pictures of the great houses, but also what looks like a village green, and there are geese or ducks, you know, just grazing on the village green. He has effected some change, but it's not that dramatic.
It would have been dramatic if we're now used to the day of JCBs and machinery to do all the work. Any change back then would have been dramatic. So it's the subtleties he's trying to, maybe perfecting the work of Brown. So perfecting the work of the guy who said he was perfecting the work of God.
Now, what was the picturesque controversy?
The picturesque was about another movement. So there were all these movements, what comes after Brown and picturesque. Their idea was everything should be in a picture frame. So you'd almost hold up a picture frame to a view and create a scene within that. There was also a romantic movement which believed that gardens should have much more texture, so it should be much more craggy, so there it could be gothic forests and very dangerous looking waterfalls and whatever. And Repton stood in the middle of all those and often debated with them.
And satirised for his pains?
Oh, absolutely. So in Mansfield Park, Jane Austen did mention him. Mind you, she put him in, she had one of her characters talking about him, called him Repton, and she was satirising the vogue of the day. So just like talking about Monty Don and saying whatever.
Now, tell me about his legacy in terms of, did he impact on the ordinary suburban garden at all?
I suppose he did, because he brought the garden right back up to the house again. So he popularised things like terraces, and obviously if you had a small townhouse, you could take that. You weren't looking at vistas of fields or the village green, or you weren't talking about damming ponds or streams and creating massive lakes. He gave designs that were also suitable to be adapted to kind of Regency living in
now,
towns.
Do we ever get any feedback from the great house owners when they tried to replicate the ideas that he put down in his red book, but then other people had to implement?
Well, this is kind of where it fell down. It fell down in a number of ways in the end for Repton. First of all, he was injured in a carriage crash, and that laid him up. His time spent doing all the paintings, it was very expensive. And yeah, some of the landowners couldn't really carry out his vision, couldn't really see the end results. It's something that we're we're going through today in landscape design, where imaging from AI is so good that the householder will come out and go to the garden centre, buy the plants. They're very young. They say, it doesn't look like that. So he did suffer from that a little bit.
How are you coping with AI? Because, you know, someone I know put in pictures, photographs of garden into AI and got quite a detailed result.
It depends on how you use it. It can be very good, but it will change our industry and many other industries. And it's giving the consumer great access
because
to
each of the planting, the bits of planting that was suggested, has care instructions, where they should be planted, how often they should be watered and trimmed, and so on and so forth.
So if you think back to Repton, for an office of landscape architects or landscape designer, it's an invaluable tool, and it allows people like that to get through an awful lot more work. However, this hyper-realistic way of producing designs will, I think, make people return to the soil and the craft of gardening is going, because AI can't do that. It can't plant for you. If you look at my fingernails, that's what I've been doing.
AI maybe doesn't get its fingernails future. Dirty.
It doesn't.
So where can we see Repton's work to this day?
Rusborough would be in County Wicklow would be a great example of one of his landscapes. There's a Repton website. If you go on that, you'll see all the great houses he did. 300 designs, mainly around Britain.
So he did well in the end.
He did well in the end, but actually in the end, because he didn't make money out of installing the landscape, out of selling the plants, out of the army of workers. He was only doing the drawings. He didn't do as well as Capability Brown, who had gone before him.
All right. Jeremy Gavin, thank you very much for joining us.
Gardening on the Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Tier Lawn Country Life. Gardens are our second nature, with 15 garden centres nationwide.